Welcome to the Reformed Media Review. My name is Camden Busey. I'm sitting here with Ryan Noah, talking about some new titles and some titles that are not so new, but perhaps are new to us and things we're reading. How you doing, Ryan?
Doing really well, Camden.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for coming on over. We just got done talking about a bunch of new books that are going on for sale in the store. Again, you can check the stock at reformedforum.org/store for updates on all that. And there's always new things being posted. Ryan's always finding some great stuff. But I wanted to take this opportunity this week to talk about one book that I'm currently reading and just say how much I'm enjoying it and let people know about it because they might want to follow on. And hopefully maybe we can have some interviews coming out of it down the road. But I've also received a shipment of some new books from P&R Publishing. So I wanted to do a first look. I just got them today. Honestly, just showed up in the mail. And so I've only looked at the covers. I haven't even looked inside these books. And so we're going to do kind of a first look and just do what is typically called, I imagine, in older times and in certain journals, a book notice.
Okay.
So you have these different levels, right, in theological journals. You have book reviews, which I believe people are most familiar with. And book reviews might be, like in the Westminster Theological Journal, 2 to 4 pages, probably in the ballpark of 3. So I don't even know what that comes out to, 1,500 words, 1,000 words, something like that. And that's typically what reviews are. You know, you describe what's in the book, you have a couple critical comments if you have any, and then you go your way. Then there are review articles. And those are typically
More meaty and
big time. So those might be 7, 8, 9,000 words, which are getting into the deep issues, the architectonic structures of a book. You really want to go to town. You just can't do justice in 800, 900 words. So those are review articles. But then on the other side of things, sometimes you'll find book notices. And that's mostly just like, hey, look at this. This exists. This is roughly what it is, and it's more, in part, kind of not an advertisement per se, but just like a in passing, here's what's up. Maybe you want to check it out. So I've got 5 books on that regard, on that front, that I want to provide notices for. The first is titled Divided We Fall, Overcoming a History of Christian Disunity. It's written by Luther Whitlock Jr. He's executive director of the CNL Charitable Foundation and the Senef Family Foundation, president of Excelsis and minister at large of First Presbyterian Church of Orlando. Minister at large. That's a new one. So he probably, because he's involved in so many other things, he's probably serves as a minister. What other places might just call associate minister,
I see.
Perhaps.
So is that a PCA church?
I'm assuming it is. I don't know. We could find out.
Yeah, I just never heard of it. I go to Orlando, semi-regularly now since I have my...
Well, I definitely have heard the name. The book's got a foreword by Ligon Duncan. Tim Keller has a quote on the front cover. A compelling case, Tim Keller. There are blurbs on the back by Russell Moore, Mark Knoll, and Carmen Fowler-LeBurg. So Russell Moore says, Whitlock is a trusted voice for Christians because he evidences deep wisdom, compassion, and maturity, as well as intellect and skill. This book calls the church to gospel unity in ways that will provoke you to think, ponder, and pray. And then Knoll, which is interesting, I haven't read Knoll's comment here, but Knoll being a Protestant working and teaching at Notre Dame, a Catholic school, is interesting. He writes a blurb on a book called, subtitled Overcoming a History of Christian Disunity. No doubt.
That could go in some funny directions.
So let's read the comment.
Yeah.
No doubt that's why he was chosen to write the blurb. Anyway, an unusually helpful challenge to follow Christ as head of the church. Biblically rooted, historically informed, and pastorally helpful, this book gracefully fulfills its purpose of strengthening unity and community in Christ's church. That's good. So just to read, honestly, I've not opened these books, so I hope this isn't seen as irresponsible. This is a notice, not a review. More to come later, perhaps. So lots of blurbs in here in the beginning, but just to give people an idea of what's in the book, we have the contents, looks like 6 chapters, biblical foundations, historical considerations, the communion of saints, ecumenism, schism, and sectarianism. Chapter 5 is challenges and concerns, and chapter 6 is constructive steps towards unity and community. So could be an interesting book, forward by Ligon Duncan. It's probably worth reading. Yeah. So that's out there. Notice served. We have two other books here that look rather useful, and these could definitely these look like they could be quite useful for use in the church especially. So I'm always on the lookout for books like this because a lot of them exist, but fewer of them are good. So here's a book titled Letters to a Romantic on Dating by Sean Perrin and Spencer Harmon with a foreword by Heath Lambert. Heath has been on the program before, so a former college roommate of Jared Oliphant.
Oh, is that right?
And okay. Heath...
Small world.
Yeah, right. Heath is the head of, or executive director, I don't see his title on here, but he's executive director of the Association for Certified Biblical Counselors, or Association of Certified Biblical Counselors. It's called ACBC now, what used to be called whatever the Newthetic Counselors Organization was.
Okay.
I don't remember. NANC, the National Association of Newthetic Counselors. It changed its name to update itself and maybe, you know, leave behind some bad connotations that some people had with the word Newthetic. But it looks like they've got a publishing deal. I don't know the details of this, but both of these books that I'm talking about have... They're published by P&R Publishing, but they have the ACBC stamp on the back.
Okay.
So I'm assuming they're...
Is it part of a series there? I mean,
yeah,
they both have romantic in the...
Exactly.
Title.
I think
okay.
They are. They must be. They've got some sort of a partnership. Westminster's done this in the past, and CCEF used to do this back in the day with P&R before they went over to New Growth Press. So this is Letters to a Romantic on Dating, and then the other is Letters to a Romantic on Engagement.
Oh, wow.
So I assume one leads to the other.
Yeah, unless you're dating for sport or, you know.
Dating for sport.
That's what one brother in the faith told me a long time ago. Christians don't date for sport. I said, no.
Well, at least he said they don't.
Yeah, duly noted. Good. Thank you.
Duly noted. So there's some important, very practical questions here, and this is why this could be a really good book for pastors to read so that they might have something they could pass out to people in their church. 20 chapters. I'll just select a couple so you get a sense of what's in here. After there's a foreword by Heath Lambert, there's an introduction, How to Think About Dating, and this book. That could be useful because there are a lot of different Christian ideas about that. But then you have chapters on marriage versus singleness, preparing for romance, contentment in dating. Should I date a non-Christian? I'll just say no. Bad idea.
No.
Don't do evangelistic dating. First date, declining a date. Should we be in a relationship? On parents. Mm. Dating and pornography. There's stuff on sexual history. What happens if you just sinned sexually? On kissing, expressing your love. So there's some important stuff here, stuff you're going to be dealing with in a church. Letters to a Romantic on Engagement, also by Sean Perrin and Spencer Harmon, with another foreword by Heath Lambert. And similar thing here, but presuming this is for people who are now engaged because they heeded the lessons of the other book. Now they're moving towards marriage. Here's the opportunity of engagement, the cost of engagement. Yeah, more so the man.
More so what?
Costs more for the man to get engaged traditionally. But then he gets it back on the backside, being the bride's family pays for a lot of the stuff, right? So
Sure.
It's only fair.
I just read a good article from Dr. Joel McDermott from American Vision on why you shouldn't give diamond engagement rings.
Oh, yeah?
It's just a total waste of an investment.
Bitcoins?
Give something.
Sorry, dear. Here's a virtual engagement.
Yeah, but...
My engagement contract with you is stored in the blockchain,
mm.
even though there's no visible proof.
Now you're talking past me.
She can't take that,
I'm not
to,
on that level.
To her friends.
Yeah.
That doesn't Instagram well. The details of engagement, bad advice, good advice, till death do us part. Should we end our engagement? That's a big one, because sometimes people feel like if they got engaged... There's, you know, no backing out. Make decisions together, choosing a church, a spiritual relationship, maintaining friends, you know, handling conflict. But then some other practical stuff on modesty, birth control, on sex, preparing for your wedding night. So a lot of good stuff here. Actually, probably want to read this really fast so I can give it to some people I'm doing premarital counseling with. Could be useful. Two more than the book I'm reading. Thinking Through Creation, Genesis 1 and 2 as Tools of Cultural Critique by Christopher Watkin. Oh, interesting. Why is that interesting? Because Christopher Watkin's been on the program before. He's a senior lecturer at Monash University in Melbourne, Australia. He contributes to Audio Temperamentum. What? That's his audio. Oh, man, I'm just embarrassing myself now. I think it's Latin, but I can't tell where the word breaks are. Anyway, his website's on the internet.
Where's Dr. Waddington when we need him? Or, you know.
I don't know Latin enough to take like a series of Latin words all strung together with no punctuation, no capitals to be able to split them yet. Terram partem? I'm really going to embarrass myself. I already have. Exploring the relationship between philosophy and theology. So he has done one of the PNR books on Derrida. In the Great Thinker series.
Oh, and the new one that's going to come out.
Well, the series is already out now, so his book is available.
Okay. Oh,
and
wonderful.
Scott Oliphant's got one on Aquinas. My book has been turned in, but it's not. Need to work with the editor to finish whatever needs to happen on that end. But hopefully that'll come out. Lane Tipton's got a book on Bart coming out in that series, but you can check Christopher Watkin in the series. This, though, is looking at Genesis 1 and 2 as tools of cultural critique, and has some real significant blurbs on the back by Kevin Van Hooser, Trevin Wax. Dan Strange has also been on the program. Jim Cassidy did an interview with him.
Oh, yeah.
On that.
There's no rock.
Exactly.
Or no other rock.
Their rock is not like our rock, which is a theology of religions, a very Vantillian kind of approach to the question of theology of religions. Really good episode. I was sad I wasn't there. Probably not been on a Christ the Center, maybe only two or three times, and that was one of them. It's because I was traveling and Jim had that set up. Anyway, it worked. Al Wolters, you know that guy?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, you love that.
Creation
Regained. And I read that book because it was assigned by none other than William Edgar, who also blurred the book here.
Okay.
Professor of Apologetics at Westminster Theological Seminary. So
I see a foreword by
good Kuyperian stuff here, right?
John Frame, too.
Yeah, there we go. Cultural Criticism. Watkins, he knows his stuff.
Yeah, this looks really interesting. I'm going to pick this up.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for sending it, PNR. And then lastly on the notices, Departing in Peace, Biblical Decision-Making at the End of Life by Bill Davis with a foreword by Joel Bells. Joel Bells used to be editor, executive director, I forget his title, at World Magazine. I saw him speak once at Bethany Baptist Church in Peoria, Illinois, where I used to worship. This has blurbs by Michael Horton, Richard Pesci, James Anderson. He knows what's up.
Indeed.
And Bob Godfrey. That's quite a list of guys. That's pretty good. Bill Davis at an MA at Westminster Seminary, California, and a PhD at Notre Dame, none other. He's professor of philosophy at Covenant College, adjunct professor of systematic theology at RTS, and an elder in the Presbyterian Church in America. Great. I'm glad he's writing. So here, let me read the book description. Decisions at the end of life create deep anxiety for those involved, but it is possible to find peace and comfort amid the hard choices. As a church elder and hospital ethics consultant, Bill Davis has talked, walked, and prayed with many people in end-of-life situations. Employing varied case studies and biblical ethical insight, he guides you in making decisions for yourself and others, preparing advanced directives, taking financial concerns into account, and navigating new realities in American hospitals. So clearly these are some really important things, and there are going to be a lot of instances where churches are going to need some biblical insight into some of these questions, and this book looks like it could help a great deal. My parents probably are listening, but you know, I hope I have my parents for many, many years. As executor, executor of the estate, you know, I hope I don't need this book, but there will be a day when I need this book. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, this is the kind of book you want to read now as opposed to when something does happen, you know?
Right. Exactly. And even if, you know, listeners are not going to be executing people's estates, somebody is.
Right.
You know? So this is just real important stuff, and this kind of thing that no one ever tells you much about or talks to you, or you just get thrust into scenarios sometimes, and you have to make, sometimes you might have to make life and death decisions, you know, if your power of medical power of attorney, you know, and you're going to want to make those with biblical wisdom and to understand, you know, what the Lord says about certain things. So no joke there. Departing in peace, biblical decision making at the end of life. Finally, a book I'm reading, Martin Bucer, A Reformer and His Times, by Martin Grishat, translated by Stephen Buckwalter. Mr. Grishat is a university professor, at least back in 2004 when this was published. He was university professor of church history and contemporary church affairs at Justus Liebig Universität Gießen, Germany. He's the author of numerous books in church history and a leading authority on Bucer and the Protestant Reformation. Buckwalter, the translator, is a researcher at the Bucer Forschungsstelle of the Heidelberg Academy of Sciences and Letters. Sounds like a cool place to visit. We should take a trip over there and go, hey, where's the Heidelberg Academy of Sciences and Letters? Can we hang out? We could do an interview. Bucer, a real significant reformer from Strasbourg. Ryan and I were just talking. He was German. Mm-hmm. And even though now Strasbourg is in France.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, I'll bet it switched back and forth from, I mean, you were even saying that it was under Habsburg imperial control for a while.
Right, but it wasn't like part of the contiguous Holy Roman Empire. It's a, it was one of those kind of like satellite territories.
It's an island out there.
Yeah, but anyway, it was. Charles V was reigning over it for a time. So Bucer is obviously, well, maybe not obviously to everybody, but he's a huge, important reformer from Strasbourg. But I didn't know much about him. You know, you hear his name, and I knew a little bit about how he was exiled at the end of his life. He kind of helped with the 39 Articles because he was exiled to England, and Thomas Cranmer took him in. I knew a little bit about his interactions with some of the other reformers, but I didn't have a full-scale, you know, I'd never read a lengthy biography, a scholarly biography of Bucer. Mm-hmm. So I looked online and found that there was one, and I ordered it. And so I've really been enjoying it. It's published by Westminster John Knox Press. It's a pretty substantial volume, I think, in terms of all the pages, including the notes and whatnot. You know, it's roughly 334 pages, and then there are some maps at the end, which are important because you're learning about cities and electorates and different states and the Swiss Confederation with all the different cantons and the number of cantons changed over the years. It's confusing for someone who's not a church historian scholar. And I imagine even for them, it's confusing. Mm-hmm. So this is a really great book. And I didn't want to wait till I finished the whole thing, seeing we had opportunity now. But I'm halfway through, and I'm reading now about how Bucer is trying to negotiate peace among all the Protestants and provide a united front. So that goes back to that earlier book we were talking about. He was a true ecumenist, but he never wanted to sacrifice the essentials of the faith. And so he's trying to negotiate peace between Luther and Zwingli at the Marburg Colloquy and then later. And there were many confessions of faith that were written and came out, and he's trying his best to figure out a point of contact or commonality, a true formula of concord with the Lutherans at the time. And it's proving difficult. So, and Zwingli kind of cut off ties with Bucer over this. But Bucer keeps trying. So this is a great book. I encourage you people to follow up. I hope in time to come to schedule some Christ the Center episodes on Bucer and
on the continent over.
Well, that would be really great. We could come up with, we can get a grant or something.
Yeah, to next Reformation Day. Take a Reformation Day tour. Reform Forum Reformation tour.
Tour. Bucy on Bucer.
There you go. You might have to brush up on your Latin, though.
Well, that for sure, and my German, just so I can get around.
Right.
So this is interesting, and I didn't know about this book. I'd never heard anyone talking about this book, so I want to be the one telling other people about it. So it's definitely well worth it, and people should get it in their library. Bucer is no joke, and he ought to be read and understood. So, you read anything? You got anything up your sleeve?
Yeah. You know, I'm reading the collection of sermons from John Murray. Which was a Christmas gift from you.
Yeah.
But I'm making my way through that, and that's awesome. I'm reading the Festschrift for Dr. Vern Poitras.
Yeah. You've read more of that than me.
Yeah.
I haven't been able to get into it yet. I'm really looking forward to it.
Okay. Well, yeah, you're in for a treat.
Yeah. There's a lot. I mean,
and you got an article in there and a lot of friends in there.
Yeah. It's loaded.
But it's a dynamite volume.
Yeah.
Those two are on the shelf. And
that's another one I hope to have a lot of interviews coming up soon.
Okay.
We're going to start calling the folks up and, hey, you know, just a matter of time. So I imagine March and April are going to be loaded with some of these titles.
Right. Yeah, the one with Dr. Waddington was wonderful on Edwards and creation.
Yeah,
I really enjoyed that.
Man, a lot of good stuff. A lot of good stuff. So if you'd like us to review something or if you have a review for us, of course, you can get a hold of us at mail@reformedforum.org. Thanks so much for listening. This has been the Reformed Media Review. Take up and read.